Support for the City of Smack podcast comes from New Balance Running. I've been waiting a few weeks to finally put this ad read together because I'm excited to share my review of the New Balance SC Elite V4. It is the shoe that I wore to break 3 hours at the Houston Marathon, and now it could be yours. I had my first chance to try on a pair with a secret all-white prototype at the New York City Marathon, and I came away from that race a bit bummed about my time, but with zero issues on my feet, no hot spots or blisters, and my legs weren't as beat up. So while I could have opted for any other shoe, I stuck with the SC Elite V4s. It's got a new PIBA fuel cell midsole, and they updated the carbon fiber plate design to have a more forefoot stiffness, so you get more pop than the other previous versions. They also changed the upper to Phantom Fit, so it secures your foot down. The bonus in all of this is the neon accents. It looks awesome. So if you're looking for a race day shoe, my recommendation right now is the New Balance SC Elite V4. If you're looking for some other new drops from New Balance, there's a Fuel Cell Rebel, which is a lightweight, everyday training shoe that's out now. The old reliable Fresh Foam X1080 also has some new colors available. Head on over to newbalance.com/running to check them all out. That's newbalance.com/running. Thanks to New Balance for their support of all things City of Smack. All right, it's been a while since we've done This Week in Track and Field. It's really tough to nail down Kyle Merber for an hour of his time outside of the time that he takes to write the lap count newsletter, you know, hang out with his kid, go for runs, and then also do his other job that he holds. So we fell off of This Week in Track and Field, but I'm happy that we're going to try to bring it back, you know, on a weekly basis with one of City of Smack's newest contributors, Anderson Emerald, who is a good friend and I've had the pleasure of working with closely and alongside in the Mix Zone for the past couple of years. Magic Boost alum from 2022, now working on the board for the Magic Boost, is kind of like the liaison from the boosters to the board. But in addition to that, you know, he's got his own YouTube channel, The Final Leg, where he focuses on a lot of the top sprints, hurdles, field event news, offers a couple takes here and there, and I like that. And so we started talking in last fall to bring him into the Citius loop, and now we've had him, you know, in the Mix Zone a couple times. We kind of, you know, just thrust you into the City of Spotlight at the Millrose Games by having you on our pre-race show. And then it hit me later on. I was like, we never got the chance to like officially like introduce our audience to Anderson. And then even, you know, at the World Indoor Championships, we were posting your video recaps that you do so well at, you know, from Glasgow, just on the podcast feed. And so people listening would have been like, who is this guy? Like, and you know, but now it's our chance to officially introduce Anderson to the City of Smack audience. So Anderson, welcome, you know, finally, I guess like first time on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Chris. Intro is crazy. I love it. Yeah. It's like, y'all just threw me into the loop, jumping into meets, got my face out there a little bit, but yeah, getting a chance to really, you know, meet everyone in a sense. But yeah, excited to jump in this year. We're about to have the outdoor season coming, just coming off indoors, just coming off a really big trip that we'll talk about later as well. But yeah, excited to jump in. Like you said, I'm Anderson. I've been running The Final Leg for some years now, focusing on those sprints, jumps and hurdles, top performances. I love giving, like, you know, hopefully some big good takes sometimes, but yeah. Excited to jump into so much.
Where does your passion for track and field really go back to?
Well, really, really, really back to 2008 Usain Bolt is like where I got introduced to the sport of track and field, where I didn't even know anything. I was running in like high school and college, but I didn't know anything about track. And then Usain Bolt comes to New York City and one of my friends is like, hey, like there's this meet going on for track and field. And Usain Bolt just happens to break the world record at Icon Stadium. So that's like where things go back to, which is wild.
And then you as an athlete, It kind of blew my mind because a couple weeks ago when we were together in Boston, you turned to Kyle and like, we competed at the same meet once. And I was like, really? So I guess share a little bit about like your own athletic background.
So I went to school. So from here in New York City, I went to high school in the city, and ran track was like, running the sprints, jumps, and hurdles, but I wasn't like really, really dedicated to running track. And then when I went to college, I went to University of Hartford in Connecticut, and that's where I started to really become passionate about track and field and like serious about competing. And so competing in New England, I was like, I don't know, my school was D1. Shout out to Hartford. I don't want to like downplay. Our school is D1. They're now D3. They're doing amazing though. But in the New England area, I was kind of doing pretty well for the most part. But yeah, so 4 years as a sprinter, then I graduated. And so it's been a while. It's been a while, but yeah, I don't know.
I guess like what's interesting too about just kind of like the sidious way we cover the sport is I definitely come from, and I'm probably I think like the only one with a journalism background, right? And we've got former athletes, we've got people who have just kind of grown up creating content. That's just, the way it is now in 2024. For you, how did you get into the content creation space? 'Cause not a traditional journalism background.
No, not at all. I mean, starting YouTube, which I started in like to late 2018 or so. Well, even before that, maybe like 2017 is when I started like a blog called The Final Leg, just on like a WordPress blog or something like that. And then a year later, I was like, yeah, let me jump into YouTube. But like even more so, like my background is like in education, where I was a teacher for many years. And so that's kind of informed kind of how I approach content creation, but then also like, I guess the journalistic aspect. I still like, not sure if I am a journalist. I guess so. Maybe video journalist. I don't know. But
How do you think that, that education background does help you kind of when you get into sort of the mix zone where, I've had the pleasure of working alongside, with you at World Championships and at US Championships. And there's just a difference in sort of like your approach to speaking with athletes where like for sure, a reason why you mesh so well with us is because, we definitely see like the human side of these athletes. And we want to highlight that aside from just, tell me about the race. It's like we want to, even if it is in that space where we have just, 5 minutes sometimes max with people, like we want to get as much as we can, to further that person's story and get it out to people because you just never know whether that one clip from the mix zone is going to pop off on Twitter or on YouTube. So, how does your education, background help you when it comes to interviewing athletes?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big, big part, kind of that human side. So just on a practical level, when I was a teacher, going into the classroom every day, working with students, and obviously, well, I was teaching what, freshman year algebra, very, very challenging, with like 13 and 14 year olds. But at the end of the day, like in that space, I was teaching math. I had to like, hit these targets with like exams and tests and whatever, whatever. But like I still have to make sure that like I'm developing a relationship with the student, right? I want to make sure that I'm invested in them. And I apply that into track and field now, into the opportunity to interview athletes on a consistent basis at all these different meets. I want to make sure I can A, make them feel comfortable, B, tell their story in a way that's going to make display them in the most positive light. And yeah, also be able to get some content for us, right? To be able to get those big takes or get a really, really good story that, yeah, it's going to be good for us, good for the athlete as well. So yeah, that's that relationship, I think, is super, super important.
I joke about it sometimes because like when we've been in these, at these meets before, you'll have the athletes from these tiny little countries that you've never heard of. And, and many times like they're one round and they're done and they just walk through, no one stops to talk to them except for you. And I think like sometimes when it's like, all right, like this is the first medal ever won by this country at a world championships or wherever, you've already been kind of ahead of the game in a sense by like, oh, from stopping that person once to hear about them or where they're from, like you know a little bit more than other people. So, whereas I'm like, oh, yeah, like I fall into the trap of thinking in terms of analytics and numbers sometimes, or I'm like, that's not going to move the needle. Like, but for you, why is it that you do choose to stop some of those athletes? And is it just curiosity taking over? And at the same time, like acknowledging like these people are here for a reason. And like, it means a lot to both them and potentially to, you know, that island of 70,000 plus people or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to everyone has a story, right? And even though someone isn't making a final, isn't, you know, breaking a record or something like that, they're at a world championships for a reason, and they have some story to be able to tell. And on top of that, yeah, there's some athletes who are kind of like on the rise, and yeah, they're not like hitting those top times right now, but I can kind of see like down the line, they're going to be something big. And I mean, a perfect example is like Thea Lafond, who just won world indoor gold from Dominica. And, you know, I kind of had her on my radar for a while. So it like huge shout outs, like she's getting so much love, which is really dope. But I definitely was like, you know, I had a little eye on her before the hype came through.
I noticed that because it's like on the final leg YouTube channel, you had like a whole video. It was like, yeah, how Thea Lafond is putting, you know, Dominica on the map. And I checked the date on it and it was like, oh, this wasn't published during the World Championships. This is a couple of weeks before. So no, kudos to you. You were ahead of the game there. What have been some of your favorite stories that you've been able to tell, whether that is through, hey, I managed to get this really good interview, or, you know, I happened to put together this feature video where you explain, you know, I think that's one of the, you know, big things, the value adds that you bring to this team is that you look at things sometimes and you're like, you know, it's, yeah, when you're a track nerd and a geek, like you follow all the ins and outs, but that's not everyone. Some people may be stumbling upon this athlete or searching them up on YouTube or Google or wherever it might be, and they need, you know, that explainer and that added context. Yeah. And you do a good job of, I've seen kind of the under the hood of how you put together some of these videos sometimes where there's just like, you know, sheets and sheets of text where you know, essentially create a script to explain it to the average person, like why this matters, who these people are, or what's at stake. What have been some of your favorite stories to tell, whether that is, you know, mixed zone interviews or the final leg videos?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's definitely a lot. One that immediately comes to mind is like the sprint triple. So last year, Noah Lyles, of course, in Budapest, he got the 100, 200, 4x1 sprint triple. And that was like a monumentous, obviously it was huge because it was like Noah Lyles doing that sprint triple. He had set that goal for some time. But then I wanted to look back and see like, how common is this sprint triple? And obviously we know Usain Bolt had, you know, done it a trillion times at the Olympics and World Championships, but it gave me the chance to like really dive in and say, okay, how common is it? Who are some of the other athletes who have done it in the past? How does that potentially, you know, look going into the future? Are we going to see more athletes? So I was able to, just like you said, I do like a lot of research. And that's what I really find interesting about the sport, just like the history, how it connects with the, you know, the present and then what we're going to be looking forward to in the future. And a video like that, I went in depth, you know, I recorded at like various different places, but being able to tell the story of like the 100, 200, 4x1 is like really, really cool. And I mean, you know, Lyles is going for it again this year. So who knows, adding to that story, but yeah. And there's probably a bunch of like mixed zone interviews and things like that, that I've definitely done. I mean, it's, we do so many of them, right? Like we've been in the mixed zones for so much, but yeah, there's a lot of different stories like that.
You know, what's also really valuable too, I think that like now kind of holding you into what we do is that, you know, sometimes it's like, I'll be on my computer with a mad scramble trying to look up XYZ stat on like, hey, I think it was the first triple since this person or whatever it is. Now it's sort of, we're bringing in Anderson and like, you can bring that sort of history lesson to us directly. And I think I'll just quickly note too, it's sort of, you know, while, you know, you've been doing the final leg for a long time now where it's been so concentrated on YouTube, I think working together, one of the key things that we're going to be focusing on throughout the year is finding different ways to get that out to more people where it's like, oh yeah, I mean, for one, I encourage all the people who may be listening to this to go on YouTube and subscribe to the Final Leg YouTube channel. Second thing I think is also just sort of, we're going to find different ways to utilize Sidious's channels to get more people to watch that, but then also consume it in different ways. We've already started doing a bunch of collaboration tags on Instagram and clipping things and pushing it on our TikTok or on Twitter. And I think something we'll be working on soon is flipping all of the Final Leg videos that will be coming out into audio form. And I love, you know, diving into the podcast space. And so we'll have a separate podcast channel for the final leg so that, you know, we know that not everyone has the time to sit there and watch, you know, an hour plus long video, but you can always take that on the go and listen. So we'll be working together on that over the next couple months. And, you know, I'm excited for it. So Anderson, you hinted at it a little bit of just like the trip that you got to go on. And so a little context for the listeners, because we'll also be, you know, in addition to unpacking some of the biggest results and news on this show, we'll talk about, you know, what's happening at Sidious Mag and some of the ins and outs that we've got going on. And so a couple weeks back, I got an email from our friends at Puma that said, hey, are you interested in going to the Jamaican Champs, which is their biggest national sporting event? It's the Boys and Girls High School Championship. And in the middle of March, like, we both live in New York City. It's cold. I would jump at that opportunity to go somewhere warm like Jamaica. Fortunately, I couldn't, you know, fit it into my schedule, but you were the next person that I thought of. And so, you know, we were in discussions with Puma, and we've got some other projects in the work with them later on in the year. And so for this one, we're like, all right, let's send Anderson to Champs. And you didn't bat an eye. Why didn't you? You jumped on it pretty quick. You were just like, hey, I can fit this in. I can move a couple of meetings and calls that I've got scheduled, but I want to go to Champs. Why was that?
I mean, if you're anyone who follows, I mean, obviously following the sport in general, but if you follow the sprints for sure, like that is a bucket list item. Going to Jamaican Champs, that is, they literally say that is where champions are formed. And it is the truth. I mean, every Jamaican sprinter from Usain to Shelly-Ann, everyone has come from Champs. So I was like, I'm going to figure this out. Like, I'm going to make my schedule work. And I mean, I think one of the first pictures I sent you was like a picture of an island. So like, I couldn't turn this away.
All right. So the trip finally comes about. You land in Jamaica. Puma has scheduled a lot of different things where it was, you know, access to some of their top stars, some of, you know, a look at some of the products that there will be on display this year on the athletes, both, you know, uniforms, bikes, shoes. But even from day one, you get there and, you know, within the first day, you get a one-on-one interview with Usain Bolt. What was that like?
Yeah. So even like more context is like they, you know, Puma had laid us out, you know, we're going to get a chance to interview all these amazing athletes, Elaine Thompson here, Hansel Parchment, Johan Blake. But they also, they teased, they were like, there'll be some special guests. And I'm like, all right, so you told us about like Sharika, Elaine. I mean, what special guests could be there? And so I started to like get some hints beforehand. And yeah, so got the chance to interview the GOAT, Usain Bolt. And not only did I get to interview Usain Bolt, I got to interview Usain Bolt on an island in Jamaica. I mean, it was a perfect kind of, you know, situation to interview Bolt. And yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It was definitely like a dream opportunity that I couldn't even have, you know, thought of beforehand. But, you know, super, super down to earth guy in the few minutes that we got to chat. I'm even surprised that I got like, you know, 3-4 minutes or whatever with Bolt considering everything. But yeah, got some good opportunity to chat with him, hear about, you know, his time after, you know, since retiring, hear about his thoughts on like the current state of the sport. And yeah, I mean, he's like really humble, but he's really, really dope. So yeah.
Yeah. So, my first time, I guess here comes the old man. My first time interviewing Bolt one-on-one was in 2015 when I was working for ESPN at the time. And he had been in town for the Diamond League in New York, which existed at that time. And, you know, I can remember being, you know, a little awestruck and nervous. And I think like Bolt is the only person in the sport who can make you feel that way. You know, I kind of have always said that if you sat me down in front of any athlete, I think I'd be totally fine to do an interview. The only two people, or the only person really, who I feel like I would get starstruck around would be Derek Jeter. Like, and we're talking all sports, it'd be Derek Jeter. But Bolt kind of has a little bit of that because, you know, he is the entry point for so many people in the sport. From 2008 to 2016, 17, if someone was watching track, that is the person that they knew.
Yep.
And I think like afterward, we did fall into a little bit of a trap where the question continually was, who is the next Bolt? And, you know, I think the sport has found itself now in a place where it's not necessarily just one person. And we're hoping to kind of spread that star power out to the likes of Sha'Carri Richardson, Sharika Jackson, Noah Lyles, Gabby Thomas. And that allows for track and field to be in a healthier space where, you know, when this person gets injured and they're out for the whole entire year, you don't fall into the trap of then everyone being disappointed because you don't get to see a big star competing. So in your conversation with Bolt, when you knew kind of you only had a handful of minutes, how did you process, like, what am I going to ask this guy? I know I texted you and I was like, hey, like, don't worry. Like, nervous at the very beginning, but, and when you're with the fastest person, time slows down a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah. Like it's exactly that, where I had written down, like, I don't know, 10 questions. And I started to like narrow down, like, okay, what can I ask? And also beforehand, obviously they don't tell us like exactly how much time we have. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll have like 2 questions on the go and I'll be able to ask. And the good thing about, both about like experience and then also like kind of with Bolt, where obviously I have the experience, we're in the mix zone, like we spoke about, and you only have like a couple minutes. So you have to be kind of be like on the fly and ready to have just one question that you know you're going to throw out there and then flow with the rest of the conversation. But then also just with Bolt, he made it feel comfortable where I could just like ask, you know, it was very relaxed. There wasn't any high pressure. So that both of those sides really helped to be able to throw a question at. And I don't even remember. I think the, like, when I actually stood in front of Bolt, I was like, my mind might have been blank immediately. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy. But we ended up, you know, we had a good conversation. I mean, yeah, again, asking about his time with retirement. And I think that kind of broke the ice a little bit, because I knew that, you know, he posts on Instagram all the time where he's just like relaxing. It's like sitting by the water. So I thought that break the ice a little bit and dive into our actual conversation.
Yeah, it's sort of you have a little trade-off. You have to ease them into it, but then you also know it's like, you know, I want to get a couple nuggets out of this thing. And for us, like, that was discussing, you know, what are the world record chances for, you know, the likes of Noah Lyles or Litsila Tabogo, where, you know, if you get the chance to ask the world's fastest human, you know, what he thinks, like, it's valuable no matter what. And, you know, granted, like, we know that he's been asked this stuff constantly. Yeah. And he also knows that he's going to be asked this stuff. And so he's got to tread lightly or give you an answer that isn't 100% fulfilling, but at the same time will at least, like, you know, hold you over for a bit. And I thought it was great. You know, he gave, you know, some flowers to people, and it sounds like the 200 meter, everyone is in accordance that the 200 meters is the one that could potentially be under threat. I'm one of those people who's like, I want it to stand, because, and I feel like you might be the same way, where it's like, I want that record to stand because it was set at a time when, like, I was coming into things as a track fan, and it just falling now, it falls with like all the other records that have, you know, fallen due to the super spikes and the shoes.
Yeah,
and these two, I want the 100 and 200 to hold on for as long as possible.
I mean, I think we can all agree the 100 is like way, way out there, but the 200, like you said, if Bolt thinks that it's possible, like, for it to go down between, you know, Noah or anybody else, then it is very much possible. I would probably love to see it stand, but it's like, I don't know, 2008, it's been like 16 years or so. It's like,
it has been a while.
It's been a while. So it's maybe due. And yeah, we have so many guys who are in that kind of conversation. And I love that Bolt, he has the secrets, but he didn't want to, you know, reveal those secrets, you know, to Noah specifically. So that's kind of cool. It's like teasing a little bit, like, you know, you have the potential, but I'm not going to tell you how. I'm just going to sit back and watch a little bit.
If you want to watch that interview, it's absolutely crushing right now on our YouTube channel. Yeah. It's like over 100,000 views. It's up on the City's Mag YouTube channel. All right. So then I get a text later on after that interview goes up and you're just on the beach. But what else did you do? I guess like day one, day two. Day two, you had an early start to the day, right?
Yeah. Day two was early. So on day one, yeah, we did like a little shakeout run in the morning, which was like really cool. I mean, Jamaica is beautiful. So hilly, beautiful water and everything. So we did a little 5K, 10K shakeout run, just by the water. And then we went on to the beach, which was beautiful. So we both actually hung out on the beach the whole day, and we were just like, in the water, on the sand. It was a perfect scenic, Jamaican experience. And then in the evening, we got a chance to speak with a couple other people who were telling us about the history of the Champs, and really diving into what we were going to be experiencing over the next couple of days. We got a chance to go into the Puma Lounge, Puma Innovation Lounge, which you mentioned earlier, which they had like kind of some of their shoes on display. They also had like a really cool display of, some older shoes, kind of the progression of Puma spikes over the years from like 1968. They had like brush spikes, and then they went to Usain Bolt shoes in 2008, all the way up to like, 2016, which was like really, really cool. So yeah, that was like kind of our day one. And then yeah, we jumped into a very, very early start on Friday, and we went to the famous Usain Bolt blue track, where like all the stars, train. So that was like the early start.
Yeah, what is the layout out there? Where that video you posted of Elaine Thompson was like early in the morning, yet the sun was already out. And when do these athletes typically train?
Yeah, so that was so we got up five, well, not got up, we got to the track at 5:30 a.m. in the
Oh my
morning.
gosh.
It was crazy. And we show up in Elaine Thompson Hira, Johan Blake, Hansel Parchment, and Ness, I'm sorry, Michael Frater were all there, and Jaden Hibbert as well. And they were all there. And so Michael Frater is starting to take us through some warm-up drills. And he's like, listen, we get up in the morning and we start, these workouts early, right? We want to get things going. So yeah, and that was an experience, because the scenery, again, 5:30 a.m. By the time it was like 6:30, it was already like super bright. The sun was coming up, and it's just like scenic. I essentially, in my mind, I'm like, if I was training on this track every day, I would be one of the fastest in the world. Like, I would want to wake up and just like do what I can do. So yeah, that was an experience.
I saw a clip of you getting into blocks. First time in a
Yeah.
while.
Going back to, again, my days at Hartford, it's been a while since I was actually in the blocks, actually doing some sprinting. But it's like, if Johan Blake is teaching you how to do blocks and he's telling you to get in, of course I'm gonna get into the blocks, right? So yeah, it was really cool. Elaine was kind of teaching us blocks and teaching us how to kind of go around the turn. Johan was teaching us how to get out of blocks. Hansel Parchment was, helping us out with hurdles. You had Jaden Hibbert, and Michael Frater teaching us about bounding and explosiveness and all that stuff, which was really, really cool. And I mean, you Elaine Thompson Hira, you see her on the track, you see her breaking records, winning gold medals, but she seems like a born coach. Like, she seems like she can really execute. Johan Blake seems like a born to be a coach. So yeah, I mean, it was really, really good to be able to like touch upon all these athletes and learn from them.
How did you compare versus like the other, media content creators that were there getting into blocks? I'm sure some of them, it was like their very first time.
Yeah. I think I had an advantage, because a lot of the other people here were definitely like more on the, road running side, the marathoners. And I tapped into my sprint experience. And yeah, I don't know.
The presenting sponsor of the City of Smack podcast is Olipop. You know, we've been pounding Olipop for over a year now. 2023 was a track season to remember, and City of Smack was able to be there for all of the big moments thanks to the incredible support of Olipop. What has become known as the runner's soda isn't just a great companion for pregame shows or post-race shows, or if you're just watching at home and want to crack a can of Olipop open yourself. It's good for you too. It's a prebiotic soda with 9 grams of fiber, which is 32% of your daily needs, that only has 2 to 5 grams of sugar and helps your digestive health in a way that a threshold workout never could. We love it because there are 15 incredible flavors that will keep your body refreshed and ready to go for the next workout. My current favorite is lemon lime. Caitlin Tui's number one flavor is ginger lemon. There are other great flavors like vintage cola, tropical punch, orange squeeze, cherry vanilla, and I'm hearing rumors of another one coming soon. City of Smack podcast listeners get 25% off non-subscription orders by using code CITIUS25 at checkout at drinkolipop.com. You can also find Olipop at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Kroger, Target, Walmart, Publix, and most recently, they just got added to Costco, so pro tip there. Next time you're looking for a refreshing and healthy drink after that long run or hard workout, reach for an Olipop. You won't be disappointed. Drinkolipop.com, code CITIUS25. Velus is the active recovery footwear brand that is designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. They are launching two new styles to their recovery mix for spring 2024, the Active Slide and the Active Flip Collection. These active recovery sandals are super lightweight and equipped with Velus's three-part tri-motion technology. They cradle your heel with impact-absorbing foam that cushions your feet with every step. It's got amazing arch support and forefoot flex that allows your fatigued feet and toes to stretch and relax. Velus is focused on helping athletes recover faster before and after you train so you can get after your next run performing at your best. Run, recover, repeat with Velus. Enjoy a 20% discount by entering code SidiousMag20 at checkout at velusfootwear.com. All right, so then you get some one-on-one time with Elaine, with Johan, with Hansel. I mean, what did you take away from these conversations? In all of them, you discussed sort of how these athletes approach 2024 being the Olympic year. The universal mindset seems to be just like, yeah, I mean, this is it. It's all business.
Yeah, they are all ready. And it's interesting because they're kind of all at various different parts in their careers. But, you know, someone like Elaine, she recently switched coaches last year. She's only been with her coach for a couple months. So, and she's always dealt with injuries. I mean, you know, we've always seen her dealing with injuries, but she turns up for the Olympics. And I think like on her Instagram, in her description, it says like Olympic baby. Like she knows that this is like the year for her. And so she's like super positive. She's really looking forward to, you know, Paris this year. And she's going to be very dangerous, very, very dangerous. I might have some hot takes about, you know, what Elaine can do, but yeah, it was really cool to just get their mindset of, you know, what Paris is going to be looking like.
Cause we haven't posted it yet. We have a longer form interview with her coach. I guess, do you want to tease it for the audience as to like what they can expect in that? Because we'll put it out as, you know, a full YouTube video and a podcast later this week.
Yeah. So like I said, Elaine Thompson here, she switched coaches and she works with Ronaldo Walcott in Kingston, Jamaica. And Ronaldo Walcott, he actually coaches Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce as well. And he coached her, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, too, during the Olympics in 2021 and since then. So Elaine Thompson here joining into the fold brings like a bunch of new dynamics. So
this is what the Netflix cameras want absolutely for season two of, you know, whatever the series is going to be.
Right. There. I mean, one of the biggest conversations is like, do Shelly-Ann and Elaine train together? And that's like a question I definitely asked coach about that. And then even more so, like he spoke about just the landscape of women's sprinting specifically, like the 100 meter dash between Shelly-Ann, Elaine, Sha'Carri, Julian Alfred, Talu. So we really dove into a lot of that. And he had some really, really good insight. I mean, even though like, I feel like he's a newer name on the sprint scene in terms of like coaching and in the Jamaican coaching world, he is super knowledgeable and, you know, he is well researched on, you know, the history of the sport. And then also like, you know, he's a very good coach, just overall a very good coach.
I do think that's sort of maybe where like, maybe we had a little bit of an edge on, you know, some of the media content creators that were invited is like just your genuine, you know, curiosity about things. And at the same time, just your knowledge, it wasn't just sort of like, hey, take me through like your warm-up routine and like, you know, show me this thing. You actually kind of, you know the dynamics of things, you know the specific details of who's who, who's been where and how people perform. That, you know, the fact that he gave you 20 minutes plus.
Yeah.
I'm like thinking, I was like, did he realize there's a camera this whole entire time? Were you just sitting there being like, okay, all right, keep going. Like, this is gold.
Yeah. And even like in the interview, it turned into like a conversation. Like he was posting questions back to me, which was again, cool. Cause it's like diving in, I have that knowledge. So he felt a little bit more comfortable. I'm even actually going to go back to Usain Bolt really quick. Cause the idea again, on this experience, there was a lot of content creators who aren't like necessarily track and field fans.
And that's fine. Cause that you want to bring in their audiences, right? If you're the brand.
Exactly. Right. And I think it was great overall for everyone. But when I interviewed Usain Bolt, I got to, you know, take a picture with him earlier and I told him about, you know, the experience seeing him in New York and he was like, oh, wait, okay. So you're like an OG, like, you know, about all this. So yeah, that kind of helped me in these kind of interviews that I got the chance to do with everyone over the week.
So Champs, the actual meet, which, you know, as we were kind of texting throughout, you know, the weekend actually started, you know, while you got there on day one, you just didn't go to the meet until the final day. Is it sort of structured like the Penn relays, where it's like, all right, like, yeah, there's, you know, freshman, sophomore, whatever championship races that are, you know, for the smaller schools or whatever division it might be. And then as the weekend builds, the final day, which was Saturday, is the day that packs the whole entire stadium.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. If like, you know, Penn Relays is, you know, a couple days, same thing with Champs, you know, it starts for a couple days. It's like building up, you know, I think it starts Wednesday or so, and there's a couple like heats and things like that, and it just keeps building and building and building until Saturday, which is like the day, finals, packed stadium. Like, I mean, there's a lot. Well, we can dive into some things, but yeah, it's kind of just that comparison to Penn Relays, I think is good.
How are you handling just sort of like this mental build of just like, all right, like, yeah, it's Friday, and all right, now it's Saturday. Like, you and the build up to actually getting to the stadium must have been also just kind of, you know, I don't know, exciting and just overwhelming, I'm sure too. Like, when you walked in there, was it just sensory overload where I see the videos and I'm jealous of just how packed and loud it is.
Yeah, and even like context is like, again, speaking not only with just like fans of the sport, but then also other people in media from like Jamaican media, they've always hyped up that this experience is like no other, that the crowd, the stadium is packed, the crowd is loud, and you're always hearing about these things. So that buildup, you know, over the couple of days leading up to Saturday was intense. And is it going to live up to the hype? Is it like what they really say? And yeah, I mean, walking into the stadium was absolutely insane. I mean, it's debatably like an experience I've never felt, even having gone
Yeah,
to like
describe
world
that.
championships. It's like, because again, this is like a Penn Relays where you'll have high schools, you'll have like young kids running. And there was a 4x4, I think, where it was like age 10 to 12 age group, like super, super young kids. Stadium is packed. It literally sounds like a world championship final. And I'm like, how is it that Jamaica is able to capture this energy and translate it when, you know, an event that's, you know, most people wouldn't be, you know, thinking about is going on. And yeah, I mean, the fans, every single race, fans are completely on it. The sounds of the horns are just like going off constantly. And you just feel like this is it. Like, this is track and field heaven. And like, that's the best way I could explain it.
I love that because, like, for that, you know, 10-year-old who's running in that race, that is their Super Bowl moment, right? That, like, oh, I ran and I had 30,000 plus people like cheering for me. And if that goes a long way in continuing that athlete on their, you know, athletic path where it's like, oh, that was really cool. I want more moments like that. I'm going to stick in track and field. And that's a big plus for Jamaican athletic development. All the people in the stadiums, I guess from the photos that I've seen, rooting for like their high school. How does one choose like their allegiance to a team? Because it's like, did all these people go to those schools?
Yeah, I mean, they have like just a couple of these different really, really prominent high schools around the country. And yeah, it's like either you went to the school or your family members went to the school, your kid is going to the school, right? You know, it's really like a family affair where, you know, you have that connection in school and they are all about it. Like even outside of the stadium, just like in the hotel that we were staying, there were people wearing different colors, and it was like you knew what school they're representing. Even we had like some green t-shirts that were Puma, and they were like, okay, you're for Calabar, like you must be, even though our thing doesn't say anything, it's just a green, right? So the this pride that everyone has for their schools are amazing, and it just adds that energy, it adds that you know, that ambiance that we, you know, feel in the crowd. And I think that like that really drives the athletes to do to be as best as they can, you know, when they're competing on the track, right? They don't want to let their school down. They don't want to let their family down. When they're wearing those colors, it really means something, you know, when they're competing on the track. So yeah, I mean, they have some pride. They had some big pride.
What is like, did you come away with any sort of keepsakes from it where, like, oh, you're like, you know what? I like that school. I want to get one of their shirts or anything. I mean, I'm sure like you got, you know, a ton of free stuff from this trip, but like, where was there anything that really stood out to you at the stadium? 'Cause, you know, you could go to a baseball game, get a baseball hat, or football game, you go get a jersey. But like, for this one, did you get anything?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get anything from any specific school. I wish I did. Like, I wanted to get, so Kingston College was one of the schools there, and they were like
They're
on
hot
a
this right
hundred.
now.
Yeah, they are like on point. And you know, they came with like giant flags, of course, their shirts and everything like that. They did have some like small shirts that I really, really wanted, and they were like waving it around after every race. So yeah, there was some good stuff. But I mean, that I really feel like some of the elements from Champs could be translated. At least like some things could be taken away in terms of like just that pride that you have for different schools. 'Cause I wish some of those I wish that excitement can be translated into some of the events that we have, whether it's Penn Relays, whether it's, you know, USA Champs or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that could take away, but yeah,
It's
there's
so
some
hard
examples.
though, because
It
like,
is.
and here's me playing devil's advocate, where like you have a much smaller, country,
Yeah.
and that's the whole reason why it works so well, where it's like you don't have as much of a fragmented fan
Yeah.
allegiance. Like if you think about the NCAA, how many colleges are out
It's
there that
true.
are Division One, Division Two, Division Three, and if like you only had sort of that pride to that school, like yeah, I mean like now those fan bases are, cut up in 500 plus or whatever, however many it is. High school, double, triple, five times or 10x that number. So like we're just too big of a country to have that. And it's like, oh, you go to USA's, I don't know, like am I rooting for the Northeast? Like I'm
It's
rooting
true,
for all the
yeah.
Northeast athletes. It's so hard, but like, and that's why I guess like it just works so well in Jamaica.
Yeah, and even a big thing is like, again, going to the point that it's like so small, they really feel like it's a community. Some of like these legendary athletes went to many of these schools where, you know, you're going to know that someone went to Calabar, someone went to Kingston College, right? But sometimes with, you know, in the US, our pro athletes, we may of course know where they competed in high school, but it's not like this big thing and, you know, carrying it through as they go through their professional career. And then, yeah, it's just that pride is like really, really in depth. So it's like, I don't know. There are some things we could take, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
I remember last year, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce was in attendance at the meet, and I'm
Yeah.
sure like there's a ton of these superstars who go back, and the Puma athletes, they used them to
Yeah.
unveil like the new Olympic team uniforms. I get, and from the clip that I saw of Shelly-Ann at the meet, it wasn't that like there's this luxury suite box that like she sits in and like that's where all the top stars are. It's like she's in the mosh pit of sorts with, the people with the for the school that she's rooting for. That I thought
Yeah.
was awesome. Did you see that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first things I saw when I went down, I, you know, got into the stadium. We went down to our seats, and as I'm walking, I see Kemba Nelson, who's, you know, she competed for the University of Oregon, and you know, she was part of the Jamaican relay in 2022. I'm like, she's just sitting in the stands. And then later on through the day, I see like Asafa Powell literally just hanging out right by the side with fans, just like watching the meet. Elaine Thompson-Hira just like hanging out. Again, it's like these are stars, like legends in track and field, and they're just like with the crowd, right? They're just as much a fan of, you know, the schools that they competed for, of like just the energy in the crowd as like anyone else would be, as a family member, as a brother, a sister, or mother, right? So that is like unmatched, right? I don't know if we have that same kind of experience in we don't have that same kind of experience, right? In the US, right? So that is a huge, huge thing that I think goes a long way to even like build that connection with athletes.
Do you think Jamaica could ever host, like, I know, I guess maybe world champs would be tough, right? Or
Yeah, world champs would be really tough.
like
I
a
feel like they
world
can host
relays, right?
world relays. They can definitely host. I feel like they can host a world relays and at least like a. I mean, they could in theory host a Diamond League. I mean, they have some big meets already that some athletes go to. But I feel like a world relays would be really big. That's like, you know, obviously it's in the Bahamas later on this year, but you know, you have the Caribbean nations, of course. You know, U.S. is right here. A lot of countries would be able to come down, and again, you can't replicate this type of energy anywhere. I feel like people would be cheering for every single relay, every single race that, yeah, would really get things going.
All right, they unveiled the Puma uniforms. If was that like the equivalent of like a halftime show? Like they had them all come out. Like where how did they coordinate that whole thing? Because it was cool.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, this is the first look at the kits that Jamaica will be wearing. at the Olympics. We uploaded a video on our YouTube channel where you got the chance to talk to some of the designers behind it. What's the scoop on this new look? Because high praise on all of like the quote tweets and comments, like they look great.
So yeah, earlier before the meet, before they actually revealed it on the track, we got a chance in the Puma Innovation Lounge to see, not only see the actual uniforms and all the different styles, but then talk with some of the execs and also Rochelle Clayton, who's 400-meter hurdler, who's won, bronze, I think, most recently at the Budapest World Champs. She was one of the athletes that, got a chance to kind of try them out as they're going through testing and building. And yeah, I mean, it's getting so much love. And what I loved, again, definitely check out the video that we have on Sidious. I love like just the attention to detail that they've put in, some of the sustainability aspects and how they've like worked directly with the athletes to, create something that they're really gonna like. And so yeah, that was kind of like the reveal and the kind of the intro to it. But then on the track, on the stadium, I mean, I've already been dropping some names, but Jamaica really had, and Puma brought out every star that you can imagine, throughout the history of of Jamaica's track history. I mean, the only one, Usain Bolt, he was on the island, so he didn't come out to the stadium. But you're seeing again, Chirika Jackson, Elaine Thompson-Hira, Safa Powell, Johan Blake. They're all coming out wearing the new kits. And first off, they have like this drum line, introducing them. You have a couple of high school students who are coming out dancing as well. And then you have the professional athletes, come out. They play like a really like intense video history, like really talking about the history of Jamaican track and field. It was super, super dramatic, but it hyped up the crowd. And once everyone kind of stepped out, it was electric. I mean, I already said the meet was electric, but at this moment, this was like electric. Insane.
No, I love that. And you posted some clips from it on the Final Leg Instagram page as well. And I mean, I was just jealous, I think, all weekend, consuming all of it. All right, so to kind of like close the loop on, the trip to Jamaica. Yes, like it was fun to be on the island and basically take in all of the Jamaican culture in the sprints. But at the end of the day, like, still, USA kind of on top right now when it comes to just like the sprints, where even Asafa Powell talked about it in this interview that we have up that you did, where it's like, yeah, Oblique Savile like is their top star who's finished fourth in the last two world championships in the 100. But where is Jamaica at in terms of its on the women's side, crushing it? Elaine, Chirika, Shellyann.
Everything's locked
But on the
down.
men's side, it's still sort of like they're looking for and developing like their top talent. I think a little hot take. I like how this what's his name? Kishane Thompson,
Kishane Thompson, yep.
how he closed out his season last year, that I'm like he's gonna be one to watch. But overall, Jamaican sprints, how do you think they're feeling going into the Olympic year?
I actually think they feel really good right now. I do think that they're definitely on the watch, knowing that they have some more to do. It's interesting, since Jamaica hasn't been on the podium in the 100 meters since Usain Bolt got bronze in 2017. So since he retired, Jamaica hasn't won a medal yet. Like you said, Oblique Savile got fourth at the last two world championships, but they are like really, really hungry. I think that they're, so Akeem Blake, we were just at World Indoors in Glasgow. He got a bronze medal in the 60 meter dash behind Noah and Christian. And I think something like that is going to motivate not only Akeem Blake, but some others to really say, okay, we need to like get back. We have that shot. We are able to do it. I actually think that this is tough, but I do think Oblique Savile is going to take the spot of somebody very prominent on the podium. I think he's going to be able to get on the podium in the at the Olympics this year, because he's like someone where, again, Jamaica hasn't medaled at any World Championships or Olympics since Usain Bolt retired. And I think someone like Seville, who actually trains, with Usain Bolt's old coach, I think he's realizing like, I can't keep doing this. Like, I can't keep ending up fourth. I need to take someone's spot and I need to get on the podium at the Olympics. So he's someone that I think is going to be, I think he's a guy. I don't know.
Totally different from Bolt in the sense of like smaller guy. Like,
Yeah.
and it's so interesting because it's like, yeah, everyone talks Bolt's big edge was that he was like 6'4", loomed over everyone and had this
Yeah.
amazing stride. From your observations, how do you describe Oblique Savile as a sprinter?
Yeah, he is like obviously much shorter than Bolt, right? He's
Like
much
Trayvon
taller.
Bromell's height, I think,
Yeah,
right?
he's like, yeah, he's really like Trayvon, right? I think they're very similar, but his form is obviously very different than a lot of other athletes, but he is, technically efficient. And I think again that he really is going to be a big threat. That you don't want to end up fourth. That's like the worst place to end up. And back-to-back years, yeah, he's definitely going to be one to look out for. And he also trains with Zarno Hughes, who got I think he got the bronze medal last year as well. And so that motivation is there for someone like Oblique Seville to really step up. And I'll say Kishane Thompson, I also kind of have on my radar, and he went crazy last year. He ran, I think it was 9.85 and 9.87 the last two Diamond Leagues. But the one thing, he's never competed either at World Championships, Olympics, and he actually didn't even compete through all the rounds at Jamaican Championships last year. He only competed in the heats, and then he just like, shut things down. So he is one to look out for as well. So I don't know.
And then just really quickly touching on the women's side, you did ask Sharika Jackson about world record potential.
Yes.
What did she say?
Yeah. So she was like,
She's holding the
obviously,
cards a little close too.
because she
Understandably so.
teased. Yeah. I mean, it's like, she doesn't want to give everything out. She teased last year. I know, like, if we remember in Budapest, she ran, 21.41, second fastest time in history. And you could see there was a little disappointment in her face because she wanted that world record. So even when I asked her now, she was still keeping things, a little bit under wraps, but I can tell that she wants the world record. Like, she really wants to go for it. On top of course, winning a gold medal at the Olympics. I know that she knows that she's there. She has the potential, and she wants to go for it. Just won't say though. So,
I love it. All right. Well, we've got so many storylines to watch this season. I loved, kind of opening this week in track and field. It was a down week. There wasn't a whole lot of, big meets taking place and a ton of news. We'll unpack some results in the Lap Count newsletter on Wednesday that I'll then produce an audio version and read. But, Anderson, this was great catching up. Loved hearing all about the trip. I'm super jealous. Next week on This Week in Track and Field, we will give our bold predictions for
Yes.
the 2024 outdoor season. A couple of meets are coming up this weekend. You got, I think, Florida Relays, Texas Relays
Texas
taking
Relays,
place,
yeah.
which tends to be kind of like the rust buster for a lot of the top sprint stars. The World Cross Country Championships will be taking place in Belgrade, Serbia. But before we know it, it's going to be Diamond League time. They're already announcing fields. Fred Kerley and Christian Coleman going out to China. Bermuda Grand Prix has got Noah Lyles, Elaine Thompson competing. So, we're going to do our best to keep everyone abreast on, just where the top stars are, what the big key results to pay attention to are. So, Anderson and I will be your guys for it all throughout the season. So, appreciate everyone for tuning in and listening. On behalf of Anderson and the rest of the City of Smack team, thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.